I feel relatively certain you all have this experience. People I know from the East Coast who hear I'm from Kansas think it's funny to ask if I know Dorothy. It's like that's what they know about Kansas, right? Which is not so terribly surprising because that's what I knew about Kansas growing up in Baltimore. What I knew about Kansas was that every year we watched Judy Garland in The Wizard of Oz on our 11-inch television set, family gathered around together. You could watch it once a year on one of the three channels. And we thought that was the great mystery of Kansas. But the truth is, it's a motivating myth. It was a motivating myth for us as children. And I think maybe I do know Dorothy. Dorothy is the hopefulness in us. A young lady looking for the solution to her problems from a wizard who lives in an emerald city. He's a magician who can solve everything, resolve every problem, residing in an idyllic world. Dorothy goes to the wizard for the same reason people move to Johnson County, the land of hopeful aspirations, where all problems are correctable. But Dorothy discovers there's a catch to living happily ever after. You have to bring back the broom of the Wicked Witch of the West. All that stands between supreme happiness and Dorothy is that one Everest of a task: conquer absolute evil. So Dorothy sets off on her adventure, taking with her her three friends, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion, intelligence, heart, and courage. Dorothy uses the three to gain victory, only to discover that her wizard is a charlatan and her best friends represent her real hope. Salvation comes when Dorothy learns that she was really searching for the home she already had. She awoke from her dream, and there were her three friends, right there beside her. They had kept her going until she herself discovered deliverance, not from the wizard. We loved this story as children. It encouraged us to construct our own future, and we loved the actress who played Dorothy, Judy Garland. She seemed to us to be the very embodiment of our dreams. Beautiful, rich, the voice of an angel, glamorous. So we were crushed and shocked when, in 1969, reality struck. Judy Garland, age 47, was found dead of a drug overdose. Alcohol abuse, 5 marriages, drugs for escape. She lived a tragic, unhappy life. Seems she had her own Wicked Witch of the West, her evil incarnate, her need to live up to impossible perfection. She believed she was ugly, according to a Wikipedia article. The actress, the repository of our hopes, was not Dorothy. Dorothy was the character she portrayed, the mask that she wore. Dorothy, the champion of our fantasies, she triumphed and brought back the broom. Judy Garland, the real person, trying to live up to an unrealistic dream, was crushed by the witch of unattainable expectations. Having spoken on Rosh Hashanah about our international and our local communities, I want to speak on this holiest of nights about a religious challenge that faces us as individuals. Taking off the masks we wear and sharing our authentic selves, bringing to the fore a contented spirit and the rejuvenating comfort of knowing when we are really home. I call Johnson County the home of hopeful aspirations, but it is more. It is the place where people need to appear as though they have made it. Here we pretend everything is okay, but we lust for 50% more than we have. Here we wear the masks of success in every aspect of our lives. Here we feel shame for not living up to the pretense that we fake for our neighbors, our acquaintances, and even our friends. Johnson Countyans so often live as though the perfection of Oz were an actual possibility. And many feel shame failing to achieve that perfection that we hope there can be. We hide our insecurities about our achievements, afflict ourselves with guilt for not meeting our responsibilities, get surgery to pretend we're not getting older, isolate ourselves emotionally from others without discussing our problems. You know what the tragedy is? Johnson County, Kansas City, this Jewish community, these are exceptionally high places to live. Johnson Countyans have less poverty, lower unemployment rate than most counties in the country. Most of us have the basics: homes, food, clothing, health care, education, friends and family. But the truth is that no one anywhere ever lives a life of perfection. I'm not talking about your kids didn't make the honor roll, or soccer player, or cheerleader. I'm not talking about bringing home a $100,000 paycheck. So let me tell you the story of a member of the congregation. I called a congregational father I hadn't seen in a while. "How's your family?" I asked. "Oh, they're fine. Kids have gotten married. I have grandchildren." "How are you and your wife?" "Oh, I've been out of work for 3 years. Have no income except for my wife's job. She had breast cancer several years ago. She's doing fine now." My jaw dropped. I knew nothing of it. And that story is typical. At least four of you sitting here have Parkinson's. So much breast cancer, I've lost track. Many people out of work, some multiple times. Others underemployed with half the income they once had. Struggling with severe lifestyle changes, trying to get by. We have children with learning, personality, and addiction problems. We have parents ailing from every manner of illness. One of us has had two serious illnesses in a single year, and before that quit her job to care for her parents. Many of us are overwhelmed. Single parents trying to earn a living and raise children, often alone. Caretakers struggling to keep family members out of pain while they pay the bills. Children with all kinds of medical and social problems. The list is endless, and every household is touched by something. And most often, we keep it to ourselves and pretend it ain't there. I look around the room. It's all of you. This one lost a child that she rarely discusses but remembers daily. That one still cries about a mother gone for years. This one manages on Social Security, having outlived the money that should have provided enough. This one is unhappily married and fights with the spouse, trying to keep it from the children. That one is suffering from drug, alcohol, or sex addiction. This teenager is lonely. That one is so stressed with school and self-image problems, she's grown silent and sullen. Every one of you sits here thinking of a serious issue in your lives. And most of you keep it to yourselves, your private daily reality, suffering it nearly alone, with perhaps the exception of a best friend or two, and maybe with no outlet at all. And you can't steal the broomstick from the witch, and you can't get the wizard to send you home. In your toughest moments, you wish mommy were still here to cradle you in her arms. In our lives today, particularly in Johnson County, fear and shame are not considered the universal issues that they actually are, emotions everyone suffers. Instead, we treat fear and shame as weaknesses, Signs that our yellow brick road ended somehow in the dark forest and we never found our way out. By God, we will let almost no one know about our failure. Our 13-year-olds are ashamed if they don't have a smartphone. Ashamed. Our 16-year-olds are ashamed. Ashamed if they don't have their own car. And not just any car, a cool car. Our men are ashamed if they don't make enough money, whatever that sum happens to be. And here comes the new one, ladies, so pay attention. Our women are ashamed if they don't simultaneously hold a job, be the world's most available mother, take care of a spouse, and be good children to their parents. I can't tell you the number of comments I hear from women about multitasking. There's a limit, ladies, and when you exceed it and can't do more, instead of cutting back, you feel ashamed. You blame yourselves for being a bad spouse, bad mother, or bad child, and the treadmill is exhausting. There's a Hasidic story of Rabbi Moshe Leib of Sassov, who taught two young men together every day. When one of them doesn't show up for class, Moshe Leib asks the other, "Where's your friend?" The student says, "He can't come today, he's feeling sick." "Well, what's the matter with him?" says the rabbi. "I don't know, says he's not feeling well." "Do you love him?" asks the rabbi. "Of course I love him. We study every day together, every day but Shabbat, all day long. How could I not love him?" "You say you love him," says the rabbi, "yet you don't know what's hurting him? If you love him, you know what's hurting him." I will wager you don't know what hurts the person sitting near you, and maybe not even the person sitting next to you. Caring about someone means not only knowing what hurts them, but sharing what hurts you. It means being willing to reveal your insecurities, at least enough to show other people we suffer as they suffer. Dr. Ira Byock writes, "For people under stress, dealing with illness, facing change, emotional isolation can be torture." He means that literally. Emotional isolation tortures us. Dorothy's finding her way home to blissfulness works only if you drop the perfection act. There will always be tornadoes in many forms threatening our lives. Companionship and a loving community through her friends and family were Dorothy's advantage, and their lack, Judy Garland's downfall. There ain't no Oz. There is no wizard to emerge from behind the curtain. In reality, you crave being known and appreciated precisely for who you are. You want the people you love to recognize you and care for you anyway. So we need to put an end to this myth of perfection. You're okay with me, whomever you choose to be. Here at Beth Torah, you are known and accepted and safe. Here, there's always a come-as-you-are party, particularly every Friday night and every Sunday morning, but actually at all times. It's difficult becoming a community to people that you do not trust or who do not trust you, because a human connection requires a modicum of reliance. Like fishing requires bait. Trust is nurtured in admitting to others we are frail. That's what it means to be a human being. Let's admit our frailties, not compete about our perfections. You don't have to complain. You don't have to whine. You can just tell people, "Here's what's going on in my life." But the fear of not looking right, of having others talk about us in unfavorable terms, of being the subject of moving lips, of being judged, of not living up to our own absurdly high expectations separates us. We need to repent this night the conceit of our perfections and stop gossiping about others when they reveal they're not perfect either. Have you ever asked a teenager, have you done your homework? Have you ever gotten a yes, only to discover the following week that the homework wasn't done? Johnny, you lied to me. Did not. I explicitly asked you if you had done your homework. Your teacher says the homework wasn't done. You didn't ask me if I did all my homework. I did my homework, just not that piece of it. Did Johnny lie? Well, yes and no. But Johnny did deceive. And this deception in Judaism has a name. It's called Genevat Da'at, literally meaning stealing the mind. When someone tells you only part of the truth, knowing that you will be led astray by not hearing the full truth, that there's more to the truth than is being revealed, and you just didn't ask the right question, that person is stealing your mind. True story. An Orthodox rabbi in New York City is told, on a horribly rainy, Friday, wintry afternoon, right before Shabbat prevents travel, there's a congregant in a hospital. He trudges off in the rain to go visit the man. The man was grateful. The rabbi left, running into another congregant in the lobby of the hospital. The second man says, oh, you must be here to see Mr. So-and-so. And he names a name. Now, Mr. So-and-so is the wealthiest member of the community. And the rabbi hurries off to visit. Entering the man's room, the wealthy man looks at the rabbi and says, Rabbi, look at the weather. This is unbelievable. It's so stormy out. It's right before Shabbat. You came all this way just to see me. Should the rabbi say, nah, I was already here seeing somebody else. Or does he keep his mouth shut, appear heroic, and hope for a large check? To leave the man with a false impression, that's Genevat Da'at. Genevat Da'at is the cunning to lie without telling a falsehood. I promise, Mommy, I didn't hit Johnny in the head while thinking, but I did push him to the ground and he did hit his head. We have woven Genevat Da'at into the warp and woof of American culture. And therefore, so many have this queasy stomach feeling of not dealing with the truth, as if you could just ask the right question, you'd not be deceived. So many people shade the truth for their own reasons. Bill Clinton was the master teacher, the guru of Genevat Da'at. The point is that as much as spin makes excellent pizza as a restaurant, and spinning is a great sport, political spin has taught our culture that intentional deception is okay. It's okay. Rick Perry has a Christian rally just before declaring for the presidency. Wasn't a political grandstand trying to attract Christians and tell them he's their candidate. It's an American celebrating his faith. Nonsense. Nonsense. Deception, even when not precisely a false statement, is a lie. It feels as though we cannot trust either the political establishment or even our friends sometimes to be truthful with us. Lies undermine trust, like infidelity undermines marriage. Just as the stock market rests on companies providing accurate accounting, society rests on trust. Democracy itself relies on trusting the intention of our leaders. We've accepted a political and social structure that accepts half-truths as if they were not lies. And you and I listen to it daily. And we know they're lying. From 1949 until 1987, we had a fairness doctrine in the media in this country. Radio, televisions, newspapers actually were ordered by the government to present both sides of the story. Can you imagine MSNBC or Fox Network being held to a fairness doctrine today? We suffer dramatically living in a culture that does not label lying for what it is, that accepts implicit or explicit deception as the norm. And there's the problem. That dishonest standard has wormed its way into our daily relationships with one another. The Torah teaches us, have honest weights and honest measures. And that begins in our homes, between you and your spouse and your children and your parents. Let your word be as pure as gold. Let your intention be transparent. For us to function, that must be the standard in every aspect of our lives. Community depends upon trusting the authenticity of the other in your life. We have constructed a culture in which lying means nothing until you are caught. We know that our leaders lie to us. We elect them anyway. We've built a house on sand, and the beginning of the change must come in our own homes, in our personal lives. No more deception. When we know the truth, let us not lead people astray. No more geneva da'at. You know what's being asked. Answer the intention, not just the words. It's a proven fact that religious people live longer. You know why religious people live longer? It's not because God favors them above the non-religious. It's because religious people belong to supportive communities in which they are known and they are accepted for who they really are, in which they don't have to put on masks and wear false faces, in which they can rely on their neighbors for a listening ear and a helping hand, in which masks are worn for Purim, not for daily use. Life is truly messy, not just for you, but for the person sitting next to you, for your spouse, for your children, for everyone you know. Sharing without deception your fears, your failings, your shortcomings, your problems makes you more like Dorothy, less like Judy Garland. Be strong in your frailty, not frail in your perfection. Admit your doubts and fears. Let those around you truly comfort you, for you're only revealing that you're human. Turns out we are like Dorothy, conquering our fears by being and sharing ourselves, listening to others sincerely, sharing our humanity with one another earns us the ruby slippers. You'll be a happier person for it. You'll live longer. You'll have a better home life, more intimate friends, greater satisfaction, and replace the mask of pretense with the face that was actually given to you by God. And then we get to go home.